Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. This is Sam, and I am doing the intro today for the episode because I am the main yapper in today's episode. So when Amanda and I were deciding what we wanted to chat about for this, what Amanda brought up is the fact that I very recently just came back from visiting Salt Lake City, which is where I had moved to. And she asked if I kind of wanted to be like reflective on the change as a whole. And really what it also brought up was a lot of stuff about me being raised in the Mormon church and my experience with that and my deconstruction, because I was also on the Girls Camp podcast, which is a massive podcast for the ex-Mormon and deconstructing community. And so this is a very vulnerable one. So I appreciate you holding my hand through this. And I just wanted to preface it with, I really appreciate the vulnerability that all of you have allowed me to have through this whole move process and this change. And the reason I've wanted to be so open about it is because I think we're really bad at talking about change, not even just at a large level, but I think more often than not, the stories that get shared are very like clean from A to B. I recognized there was a problem. I did something different. Here's how it ended, and here's how everything's better and perfect. And I've really wanted to be more authentic in this journey and explaining the messiness and how it's so normal to have emotions follow you and to have things bother you differently and things come up differently. And that is really what I wanted to highlight in sharing about this journey and this experience. And it was a tough one for me, because shame is something that I really battle with, but it was also really important for me to speak honestly. So I just want to give this little intro for why it kind of like gets real heavy real quick. But again, we love doing this podcast. This is a very, very powerful project for Amanda and I. And it's even more than a project. It's really a mission that we have in speaking about mental health differently and really trying hard to like recreate the narrative around how we speak about these things. So if you could at all rate, review, share, subscribe, that would be the biggest thing in the world for us for you to do. And so many of you have been kind in reaching out in email and comments and letting us know what you love. And we love hearing that. So thank you so much. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. And I really hope you enjoy today's episode.
Today, we're going to talk about Mormonism or trauma. The LDS church. And specifically, Sam and I just went out to breakfast and she just got back from Utah.
Salt Lake City.
And we realized that we haven't done a full – we've done a Mormon Mom Talk episode. We did a first episode where we loosely talked about our background. But we haven't fully
– no.
Dived into what it was like. And how, like, how you, you know, got out and how you decide, how you, your faith, like, we touched on that a little in, like, the manifesting episode we talked about. But I think it's a really interesting topic that people will be interested in hearing about.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, because also, I was, when I was in Salt Lake City, part of, I went to, like, go see people, but also part of why I went was because I was on the Girls Camp podcast, which is hosted by Haley Rawl. And that is a podcast that's all about like reconstruction and rebuilding your identity after like leaving high demand religion, or you're exploring leaving high demand religion. And so it was really, really lovely to chat with her. So I think that opened up like a lot of thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah.
About stuff.
And I think, yeah, if you're from there, welcome. We obviously don't only talk about religion at all, but we touch on some themes of it. Because I feel like Sam's major defining life experience that has shaped her a lot is that.
Yeah.
And mine is like addiction. And those things just get weaved in.
Yeah, through everything. I mean, it's your lens, right? Yeah. Like when any person who becomes a therapist – part of what drives you to that decision is like things that you went through and things that you've worked through on your own and And so it ends up coloring your interpretation of what you learn. And part of the training is to figure out like how to unwind from that to make sure you're not just like projecting onto everybody.
Yeah.
But it also is really helpful experience to like pull from. Yeah. And so my relationship with the Mormon Church, I think is still a very complicated one.
Yeah.
And it's one I'm still like really searching through.
Well, I think what's like, we'll start at the beginning, but I think what is unique about you, Sam, is that you were not raised in Utah, in the Mormon Church in Utah. You were raised in New York and your parents were Mormon, but it wasn't your whole life.
No. It was in that it was a very important part of our life. Mm-hmm. But the very unique thing about being in Utah is that it is all of your life, meaning more often than not, your entire family is involved in it. Your most of your friends, if not all of your friends, are in it or a part of it in some way. The majority of your social activities come from that. Even if you're not doing a church-specific social activity, you're more often than not hanging out and spending time with friends from your ward, which a ward is your local congregation if you're listening to this and you're not familiar. So in Utah, it is just so prevalent. It's baked into everything. And I didn't grow up with that at all.
Well, isn't even – I mean, for those who are like, who the hell are you to say anything? I am just a fan of Mormonism and pop culture, I guess I would say. I just think it's really I'm very interested in like kind of culty dynamics and religious dynamics and pop culture dynamics and like, you know, Mormonism is great for that.
Yeah.
So I listened to like a super long, like 6-hour multi-part podcast episode about Mormonism like a couple of years ago.
Which one was it?
It's called Blast Podcast on the Left.
Oh, I think I've heard of that.
But yeah, they went into like, that's how I know about Joseph Smith and the gold plate. So.
She recited it to me at breakfast.
It's like Moroni.
Yes.
Oh, Moroni. I'm sorry.
Moroni.
I am a false interested person. Like, I will say things that are wrong so you can correct me today. I'll be like Moroni and you'll be like no, Moroni.
Yeah.
And I'll be like Jacob Smith and it's John Smith.
It's Joseph.
And I'm going to sit here and be like, yeah, I know because I've listened to about 12 hours of podcast episodes and I watch The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City and I follow.
And Secret Lives of Mormon Wives.
Yes.
Yep. So if you've ticked those boxes, if you've listened to a podcast, watched Real Housewives of Salt Lake City and watched Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, you're now an expert.
You're an expert.
So there you go. It is literally within the community, there's a joke that like we kind of embrace this idea of like we are a peculiar people.
Mm,
like that is like we are –
admit that.
Yes. Like we are a peculiar people and people are very proud of that fact.
Well, good that they're proud at least of it compared to – I think other religions are – people feel shame or weird.
Yes. Or that like they have to take it like super serious. And so like we – I think that's what's really kind of confusing is because we take it super serious but then we try to pretend that we don't.
I mean, it's pretty serious to wear special undergarments.
It is.
Just takes – that's like if I'm ranking commitment.
Changing your entire underwear profile.
Just wearing them. I mean, it's supposed to be every day or only when you go
every
to temple?
Every day.
Yeah, that's
– okay. So there's a bunch of drama right now because they've changed the design of them. So they for women, they used to be like a cap sleeve. So it was probably like 3-ish inches on the shoulder. And now it's more of a like tank top design.
Okay.
Which technically like good.
Yeah.
But also like a little too late. And I know a lot of people are having like really strong responses to it. And that was something that Haley and I processed too on the pod and spoke about it. I think some people who are still in the church are – kind of waving that as like a look, progress. Yeah. And I think some people on the outside are like, again, this is like an example of how you do everything like 10 years too late. But that's a deeper discussion. But
So yeah. You were raised in it. Were your grandparents in it too?
So my parents, and this is the term that I used to describe. My parents kind of have like a little bit of like the fairy tale in the Mormon religion. So my dad went on his mission. My dad's from Alberta, Canada. My dad went on his mission to Quebec City, Quebec. Where my mom is from.
Great place.
Great place.
To go on love, a mission.
Love Quebec.
Compared to where's Lisa Barlow's son? Like Cambodia, I think.
Yeah.
Bolivia, Colombia, maybe Colombia.
Yeah. So my dad was in a French-speaking mission. And so when you're on a mission, you're always in twos. Okay. And the other person you're with
is called, I know that from watching the play.
Oh, and if you saw the Book of Mormon, then you know.
You're also an expert.
You know probably more than you give yourself credit. So my dad went on a mission. His companion baptized my mom into the church.
Okay.
So my mom is a convert.
So your dad helped convert your mom? Was your mom in Quebec? That's how they met?
Yeah, so that's how they met, was on the mission. Neither of my mom's parents ever joined the church. Still haven't. And my mom never really, like, some people get, like, really antsy about that in the church. Like, they try to convert their whole family, and sometimes it works.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because, right, like, again, the expert in me.
Missionary work.
Well, also your, like, family members can't go to the church or can't go to the wedding.
So this is something that I have a lot of secondhand resentment for, and it's something that my mom has expressed a lot of frustration about, which is, like, her parents weren't allowed to attend the sealing ceremony, which is, like, the wedding ceremony, essentially. They weren't allowed into the temple, and my dad's dad wasn't allowed in either. So really, it was just my dad's mom who was born into the church. But so
you weren't, like, multi-generational
no.
On both sides.
It was – so because of all of that, and the reason I explain all of that, and you're probably like, I don't care about Sam's genealogy, but the reason I explain it is because with all of that in mind, my parents had a very lax approach to things.
Yeah.
Things that a lot of people found, like, a lot of rigidity in, like, meaning not hanging out with friends on Sundays, or consistent scripture reading and family prayer and, like, family home evening, which was supposed to be every Monday, which was when you did, like, as a family in your home, like, church-specific, like, mm-hmm. activities and things like that. My parents just weren't worried about those things. Same thing with none of my close friends that I saw consistently every day or spent the weekends with or had playdates with or sleepovers or whatever, none of them were Mormon. Mm-hmm. I had a good group of friends from other wards in the area that I knew really well and mm-hmm. Was close to, but because we lived so far distance-wise, we were all in different schools and mm-hmm. we would see each other like once a month at kind of like group activities and things. So it was just different. But like, I had friends whose parents smoked. I had friends whose parents drank. I had friends who, you know, like, it just – there are a lot of people in the church as parents that would really panic to have their kid go to a home where, quote, unquote, those things were happening. Mm-hmm. My parents didn't care. Like, basically, my parents' thing was – and I also really respect this as my parents. My parents were very, like, open and communicative with me about things. Like – they spoke to me about why we made the decision mm-hmm. not to drink. It wasn't just this weird thing of like, don't. Well, why? Well, don't. Yeah, you know, kind of like the shame base. It was very like, no, we don't like it. You know, it's not good. It's not healthy. It's, you know, whatever. It's dangerous because it's addictive. So I was given kind of a depth of understanding about those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And so it was more of a choice to me as opposed to something that I was being like forced to do.
That makes sense.
Same thing with coffee.
Well, I think it's so funny that you've left and you still don't drink or drink coffee.
I know. It's weird the things that you
But you like, don't like consider yourself not a coffee drinker.
No.
But you've never drank coffee.
I have. Oh, okay. Actually, I have had.
How many times?
Because it was ordered by mistake.
I'm an avid coffee drinker who drinks coffee once.
I thought I ordered chai and they brought me a latte and I felt so rebellious drinking this. And by the way, this happened.
And that's the only time.
This happened December of last year. So.
maybe we'll work on it.
A very new thing. I drink a lot of tea. Mm, yeah. I drink a lot of tea.
Dangerous. Scandalous. It's a hot substance.
I drink herbs. But yeah, so, and that, but that's complicated, and like, we'll get into that. But, no, I was very lucky. There was only one time, and I've like chatted with my parents about this a ton, but there was one time where I felt like the Mormon shame kind of came in, and it was when I had a little secret relationship with a boy in our ward. Mm-hmm. And, that everybody, there were a lot of people secondary to the situation that got really riled up about it. And that kind of, because I was the oldest, my parents never done this before, my parents kind of all of a sudden got that like panicked sense, because there was a possibility that we were going to have sex. And there was a lot of like, there was so much shame around that. And that was like a really pivotal, like traumatic moment and experience for me, that whole thing, and took me a long time to unwind from. And a lot of the boys that I dated and like kind of attempted to date after that, it was kind of a similar experience. Mm. So it's been complicated. But anyway, so that was like the only time that I think my parents kind of got like swept up in it, but then they kind of like chilled out fairly quickly.
Yeah.
But it was more like this, oh, like that was so bad. Like, why would you do that? You can't do it. You know, kind of that more like sad, like, oh, you did something wrong, you did something bad kind of thing.
Well, I think what's interesting too is, you know, a lot of parents, I think, do that, even if there isn't a religious component at all, because purity culture exists.
Right.
So it's more obvious, right, if it's, you know, against your religion.
But right.
There are these like invisible factors.
Yes.
I mean, I remember like I watched Sex in the City and it was like a huge –
huge deal.
Deal that was very devastating to my parents because in eighth grade, I watched it at my friend's house and I like loved it, obviously. And I was like poking through our HBO, and back then, right? Like,
I think HBO was like scary.
It was bad.
I think for like teenagers and like what you would quote unquote find. Yes.
And I don't know how, I think I bought it maybe stupidly.
Oh, I think paper trail.
Yeah. And I think my parents were just like, oh my God, like, you know, I'm so disappointed in you. And it was very shameful.
You can't watch how independent adult women live. You cannot watch that.
My parents were very terrified of like TV corrupting us. Like, I loved the movie Grease as a child, obviously. And my parents wouldn't let me watch it because they smoked a lot of cigarettes in it. Like, terrified of cigarettes.
Really?
Yeah. And like, my babysitter had bought me the like, we watched it once, not with my parent. Like, I had watched it somewhere and I like loved it.
Yeah.
My babysitter bought me like the VHS tape, and I was very excited about it. And my parents were like, we have to take this away from you. You can't watch it that often because they smoke cigarettes so much in it.
Did they just like talk to you about why they thought cigarettes were bad? Or was it just kind of this, you can't?
It was a lot. I mean, I always joke, like, my dad's like stories that he would tell us when we were younger were like, Jack and Jill went up the hill, and Jack smoked, and Jill didn't, and Jack died. and Jill went to college on a full scholarship and was extremely successful. Like, Jill, it was always like, smoking will destroy your life. Drugs will destroy your life. Mm. Good and bad, right and wrong, morality, tied up in it. But it's very funny because, so I grew up very afraid of alcohol and drugs. But then when I was like desperate, I drank for the first time when I was in eighth grade also. I guess the end of eighth grade, like the summer after eighth grade. Yeah. And I had like literally convinced myself that I would like something terrible would happen if I drank. And then I had like a great time drinking and I was like, this is amazing. So then it like, because there was no structure of like, drinking is complicated, Amanda. Mm. We drink, but we drink in moderation. Something adults can do. It can be addictive. Yeah. Like, it was so black and white that when I did it and nothing bad happened, I was like, oh, they were lying. This isn't true.
Yeah. And I don't feel a thing. This is wonderful.
I feel great. Yeah. So that's like really interesting. And that's sort of a a pattern in my life of things that were told to me as like, you cannot do this. Mm. If I experimented and tried, it would like break the seal sort of. And then I would be like, oh, well, clearly it's fine. Like I had such a really specific line of like drugs, but that didn't include pharmaceutical drugs. Like that didn't include prescription drugs.
Right.
So I wouldn't do coke, but I did tons of Adderall because I convinced a psychiatrist to give it to me. And then once you can, then once you have your own prescription, you're fine taking it from other people. And it's like this line yeah. that just kind of like
keeps moving.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I think, and this is like a total side note, but I think also boomer parents in general leaned really hard into that like old school purity vibe.
A dare. I mean, dare yeah, was dare. A freaking thing.
I won that essay contest, by the way. Just so everybody knows. But yeah, like I think that's that is like a very common mm-hmm. experience. I think whether you have – I think the religion adds kind of like kerosene to that fire yeah. for some parents. But I think also for you, like it was just this inherent like our children can't yeah. do these things. They can't – Well, it was be like aware.
Reagan, right? Yeah. Just say no. And I think it's interesting. Like my dad was raised Baptist, but he hated it and he was like very against it. So that yeah. was why I was like not raised religious. But I think some of the morality of it was still left over.
I have a hard time drinking coffee. There you go. Like
because when you'll go to hell.
No, I think it's
am I allowed to ask you that?
I don't really know.
I respect you're not drinking alcohol so much, but the coffee, I'm like, are you sure? Are you sure you shouldn't try it?
There's a lot of people pressuring me.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't want to add to the pressure.
No, I mean that like sarcastically. But
it's just so antithetical to me that I'm just like, wow.
I know.
Are you sure? Can I live vicariously through your rebellion?
Like, I want to watch it happen. Yeah. No, I don't – it's a weird – I don't even really think about it because I think I've gone so long without it that I really don't think about it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's hard too. Like even this morning when we were at breakfast, she got a coffee. And it didn't even like cross my mind that that was something that I could have done. Right. Like I'm just used to being like – it's just
– like bad black diner coffee. So.
I wasn't missing
jar
out
with on like a mocha latte. Yeah.
So, and then anytime I go to Starbucks, I love their chai so much that I just like immediately go to the chai. So I think it's complicated because I just it's so ingrained and it's been so long that you just even when the opportunity presents itself, like I would have to like very intentionally be like, I am going to Starbucks. And also too, anytime I've thought about it, I have no idea what to order.
So if you are hearing Sam talking all about her experience in the Mormon church, religion, and you're looking for a therapist who gets this and can actually help you along the process of faith deconstruction, I would love to share with you about my practice, Therapy for Women Center. We are located in the Philadelphia area, but we have licensed therapists in 42 states across the country. So if you're listening, we probably can see you. We have quite a few therapists at my practice who actually specialize in faith deconstruction. Sam is obviously one of them, but we have some others as well. We also have quite a few trauma specialists. A huge portion of our therapists do EMDR, which is fantastic for trauma work. And we really believe in helping clients not only, you know, get better from their mental health, but also really live lives that are in alignment with who they are and what they want. So check out therapyforwomencenter.com to learn more. And we would love to help you in this process.
No, but I kind of get that. I mean, I've never smoked a cigarette before.
Neither have I.
Which is shocking based on my history, not yours.
I was going to say, that was shocking to no one. But yeah. For you, yeah, that is.
But it became, again, I mean, I was clearly told stories that I would die if I smoked cigarettes as a child.
That sinks in.
But then it became like I could have, there were so many times when I was like, you know, partying and stuff that so many people smoked cigarettes. But I didn't because – it became in college my like one never have I ever like
yeah,
party the, trick. And actually, the most close I got to smoking cigarettes was in recovery.
Everybody smokes cigarettes in AA,
and it is like the way that people socialize and bond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you like make friends by sitting outside
and smoking.
Mm-hmm. So I just was like, I'm in it. But I knew myself well enough to be like, Amanda, you seriously just got into recovery from an addiction and an eating disorder. You think you're not going to get unbelievably addicted to cigarettes? Like, you're going to volunteer to make this harder on yourself and collect a new addiction because you want to make friends and you want to fit in? That isn't even fitting in normal situations.
No, that was a good choice. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. It was a good choice.
That is, and that's hard.
Yeah, but it's also become like a retro cool thing.
That is true.
It's like having a vinyl record.
There is something kind of elegant about the cigarette like resting between your fingers.
It's something to do. It's an oral fixation. Yeah.
That's a good point.
Joe, what was his name? The cowboy that started it all, the Marlboro Man.
Oh, yeah.
He really, I think, did seep in, you know.
Yeah.
And then, like, the women were, like, elegant, like, who did it. I mean, it's not the reality.
The cigarette holder.
Yes. Yeah, Audrey Hepburn. But,
I guess that's true.
I think there is a retro thing, especially with teens these days, of it's
it's cool.
Thing of the past, especially compared to vapes.
Anyway, the reason we brought that up is because my parents obviously cared if I did it, but didn't care if I was around other people that did it. But going back to Utah for the first time, because I lived there for 15 years.
You went there for college? Before college?
No, I moved there in 2009.
Okay.
I did my freshman year of college at a different school and then decided I wanted to go to Utah. I'd never been to Utah before in my life. I went out there for the first time the summer of 2009. Right before I moved out there for like a family reunion, I had cousins that I probably wouldn't even know if I met them today. They lived out there at the time, and my dad's side of the family is having a family reunion. So we went out July of 2009, and then I moved out there very end of August, almost beginning of September 2009. And then I left October of 2024. So I was there for quite some time. And I know that I am someone that I feel things very deeply. I've always been that way. I really sit in things and I feel things really big. Like, things are a big deal to me. And that was something that I spent a lot of time trying to shrink. I would say like the first 10 years I was there, I tried to just kind of go with it and fit in, even though I knew I didn't fit in. I was just kind of going through the motions of it. And then I would say around COVID was when I really kind of like leaned into the experience of it and kind of started recognizing, like, I just don't think this culture works for me at all. And it was really lonely. And I think when I went back there just last week, it was so fascinating to be on the other side of a change like that. And everything that kind of came back up to the surface. And it was lovely to see everybody. And I had a good time. And I will be going back out again because there's people that I love who live there. And it's a beautiful place. But I think I was really surprised by the amount of relief that was there when I flew back home to Tampa. I was so relieved to realize that like that chapter of my life was like firmly done and behind me. And what's so difficult about the Mormon culture is they say everybody's welcome, right? And anybody right now would tell you that. Everybody's welcome. Everybody is wanted here. However, there are such specific ways to be once you are in. And once you are in, you are expected to completely assimilate, to blend in.
How did you change when you moved there, do you think? I mean, I know like college is a transformational time, so it's hard to tell what is what.
I was already like a pretty anxious kid. Like if I look back to high school, there were a lot of things that I didn't think were a big deal at the time. And looking back, I'm like, no, like I absolutely had like raging anxiety. And a lot of that was because my brother and whatever. But I also think like I was such a rule follower. I was such a people pleaser. And the Mormon religion really like rewards that mm-hmm. in a way. And so I think when I got out to Utah, I just like collapsed into this like good girl rule follower, like very stunted, sheltered world. And I thought in some ways I was like keeping myself safe. Mm-hmm. And that went on for a long time, and you get kind of so used to it, and it becomes like this weird comfort in a way mm-hmm. that you just keep on with life. And then also like you're in school, and I didn't know what I didn't know.
Yeah.
Right. And so like I didn't recognize it at the time that it was a problem, but I realized like I had a really hard time getting along with people. I had lots of friends. I knew lots of people, but I was figuring out who I was. And there were like roommates that I had that I had a really hard time getting along with. And now I realize it was because we were just completely different people with like such different like views on the world.
Yeah.
And like one time I had this person who literally like there were multiple people going around saying that you were breaking the law of chastity if you gave your husband – like if you had oral sex within your marriage.
What?
I remember that. Like I like they were saying like that was a bad thing to do in your marriage. And I remember like fighting that. I was probably like 22 at the time when I first heard that. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like that does – yeah. sense. But then everybody around you is like, no, that's what it is.
What?
Yeah, don't okay. Don't sit with it. It's don't and you don't either. If you just heard that and you're like, what? Yes, it's weird. Leave it, move on. There are people out there that are very unhappy because they believe that. So just whatever. But those are some of the belief systems that are out in Utah. Like yeah. that are out in that culture and that system and that get passed down through families and friend groups and these things that actually aren't true teachings. They're right. just like these cultural beliefs that come up and people's incredibly rigid interpretations of what you can and can't do. And something that I really struggle with because – so you have a ward, right, which is filled with all different types of people. But when you go to school – you get filtered into what's called a singles ward. And it's essentially like for you to meet people to get married. Mm-hmm. That's really like the goal. And it was really hard to make friends mm-hmm. because everybody's goal was to date. Yeah. Everybody's goal was to get married. And the expectation was that once you got married, your friendships didn't really matter.
Yeah.
Mormon social culture is a really fascinating thing because it's like I said at the beginning, there's this core social group of your ward, mm-hmm. right? And if your family is in it and your extended family is in it, you already know all of these people.
It's like a lot of Mormons also like their businesses are yes. all correlated too. Yes. And I heard this thing that it's like mm-hmm. if you can find a Mormon to do some – like to be your plumber yeah. or your dentist, you yeah. should do – is that like actually taught in the church?
Well, it's just like, oh, there's someone – like, I know this person, they'll do it. Okay. Like, it's very it's like scratch your back
yeah.
type
yeah, yeah,
yeah. vibe. And what was funny is I grew up with my dad saying, I will never – like, I don't want the church anywhere near my business stuff, my life stuff, my – like, yeah. my parents were really big in having that separation, but mainly yeah. because they knew a lot of people that got really deeply screwed
yeah.
by living that way because people often will try to take advantage of you. They'll try to not pay you.
Yeah.
They'll try to get out of like paying your rate
yeah.
or say like, well, I'll just do this for you for free if you do this for me for free. So it's like gets really complicated.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. We will be back tomorrow with the second part of the conversation about Sam's Mormon deconstruction. Today, right, we talked a lot about sort of her background and what it looked like. And tomorrow we're going to get into how it's been since she's left, you know, the complicated process of deciding what her beliefs are and what values are hers, which aren't, and how she's kind of found peace with being a late bloomer and how she's embracing a more authentic life. Thank you so much for listening. We are now on Substack. And if you want to hear this whole conversation and see the extended version with our video commentary, you can check us out on Substack at nuanceneeded.substack.com, along with a whole more bunch of bonus content. See you tomorrow.